You tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit Simplecast.com.
You're listening to The Tidbit live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. I'm Kim Bryden, your host and the CEO of Curate. So here at The Tidbit, we share tidbits of knowledge around starting a small business with a food and beverage lens. So if you run a small business or have dreams to start one, tune in. You can also sign up for our newsletter that we send out bi-weekly with more tidbits of knowledge. So head over to curateconnect.com, CURETEconnect.com, and sign up in the footer. In the first five episodes of this season, we discussed foundations of starting and running a small business, from building community-based businesses to blockchain and banking. And now, midway through the season, we're featuring different entrepreneurs from both DC and Baltimore and the amazing products and projects they're working on. This is the third feature. We talked with a cooperatively owned catering company, a brick-and-mortar cafe operation with dreams to expand into a culinary incubator east of the river in DC, and now we're sitting down with entrepreneur, farmer, and seed historian. Yes, a seed historian. Every time I hear about what he's up to, I am inspired and energized. Welcome to the show, Xavier.
Hey, Kim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So to provide a little bit more context for our discussion, I want to touch on a main point that oftentimes is overlooked in our mainstream discussions around entrepreneurship. When we talk about equality, access, inclusion, specifically in regards to starting a business, it's important for us to recognize the policies and systems that have worked against many of our citizens for generations and even centuries. So I want to bring up, there's an article in The Atlantic with the headline, "The Racist Housing Policy That Made Your Neighborhood." And reading further, it states, "One of the most heinous policies was introduced by the creation of the Federal Housing Administration in 1934 and lasted until 1968. Otherwise celebrated for making home ownership accessible to white people by guaranteeing their loans, the FHA explicitly refused to back loans to black people or even other people who lived near black people." And this policy has had a resounding ripple effect today in regards to accumulated passed on wealth. So for example, if you own a home, you have an asset from which you can take a loan against to then start a business. This is a major way people are able to finance and create access to capital when they're starting out. But it's not just a home, right? It's also land and ownership of land. And the ownership of land doesn't just mean a home. It also means having a space to be able to provide for your family and for your community. And so, Xavier, this is just one piece of what you are completely engulfed in with your work at Soilful City. And so, you know, this work isn't just east of the river in DC, but it's throughout the Mid-Atlantic. And recently you even took your work to Puerto Rico with this focus on farming for community resiliency. So I just want to start our discussion talking about why is land justice so important and how does that tie directly into food justice?
Certainly. So I think definitely for food in general, land is like the key. That's where it starts.
Of course.
And when we look at the creation of this country, it started with the violent kind of murdering, pillaging of people and taking their land. You know, so land has always kind of been at the foundation of kind of like the American Empire and kind of the struggles that that we're always going through. You know, the importation of enslaved Africans, all of that type of stuff. And we can kind of, it's still going on today when we think about Standing Rock, which was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They're fighting for land, they're fighting for water, they're fighting for resources, they're fighting for sovereignty. And so I think it's always important when we're talking about food to always start from the land kind of perspective. And definitely United States things are so systemic.
Mm.
And so I was just reading an article just last night about how there have been barriers since like the 1840s for African Americans to kind of build wealth, you know, all the way back then. And you can, it just goes from 1840 to 1860 to 1890 to 1900. And it just law after law after law after law. And it's just crazy going all the way up to the redlining that you're talking about.
Right.
And so this is like, these are just hurdles, hurdles, hurdles you have to jump over. You can talk about the Pigford case for USDA, where there's a, USDA was discriminating against black farmers. There was black land loss is such a huge thing.
Wow.
And then for me, coming from the kind of how I've been kind of groomed in farming, understanding that this land isn't my land. You know, this land belongs, it's indigenous people, you know, who this land, I guess, is the original steward of this land. You know what I'm saying? So where does that put me in the position of wanting to be a landowner or talking about land when this isn't my land in general? So I think it's very complex, and there's so many different conversations that we need to always have and continuously have. And I think there's a lot of healing that needs to be done.
Yes.
Around land. But I definitely think fighting for land and land rights is that's like key when we're talking about food.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to continue on with that, the community resiliency of when you have land and you're able to farm it,
yeah,
you know, not just for yourself, but for the community. This was in part what you were doing in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, Puerto Rico was a very, it was an amazing experience. I went on a farm brigade.
Mm.
I'm a part of the Black Dirt Farm Collective. So we went, and it was an organization, Climate Justice Alliance. They were there. There's an organization in Puerto Rico called Boricua, which is, it's an agroecology farmers collective over there. And we were fortunate enough to be able to come over there and basically go to different farms, camp on the farms, and help rebuild the farms. And so, you know, like, you know, Boricua is it's a agroecology organization. So this agroecology is political in its context. It's talking about land, it's talking about food sovereignty, but also they're a farming organization. So we were doing a lot of technical things as well. And we got to learn more about the political aspects of Puerto Rico and Puerto Rico being a colony. And
right.
A lot of these farmers don't own the land over there. A lot of people have since left the island post the hurricane. So there's so many different things. They import like 85% of their food.
Yeah.
It was very amazing. It was amazing to see. It was amazing and humbling to be in a space where, you know, people don't really have much, but when we were there, we were well taken care of. There was a lot of love there. There was a lot of joy and happiness to have us there, and they accepted us. And that really stuck with me, and just the level of organization that they have and how we were able to kind of coordinate these brigades. And so it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gained a lot from it that I want to kind of bring back to DC as far as just like being organized when you talk about community resilience, right? And things of that nature.
Beautiful. I mean, this is one of the things I admire about you the most is your ability to see the like interconnectedness of it all, because they aren't siloed factions, right? It has to do with housing. It has to do with the imports and exports of a nation. It has to do with people's ownership of the land that they're able to farm on. And so your website reads, actually, Soilful City uses the principles of Kwanzaa as a guiding philosophy for creating and sustaining healthy neighborhoods. Intertwining these tenets with the wisdom of Mother Nature allows us to use agriculture as a way to heal and organize stressed communities. That's beautiful. Like, so beautiful. So tell us more about this. Like, how do you carry this out in action each day?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's such a every time I hear somebody else read it, it sounds like super fancy and complex. So it's kind of weird. But I wanted to kind of like so the principles of Kwanzaa are Umoja, that means unity. We have Kuji Chakalia, which means self-determination. Ujima means collective work and responsibility. Ujamaa means cooperative economics. Nia means purpose. Kuumba means creativity. Imani means faith, right? And so those are them. And mm-hmm. so I kind of, you know, Kwanzaa is a holiday or celebration that happens towards the end of the year, Christmas to New Year's Day. And I kind of wanted to see how do we make those principles 365?
For
and
sure.
it really tied deeply into like what I'm doing and like the vision. Mm-hmm. And so like when we talk about Umoja, like there's unity with the work that we're doing. You know what I'm saying? I think there's unity. So we're trying to unite things. We're trying to tie things together amongst each other.
Right.
And that's really the only way we can move forward. We have Kuji Chakalia, which is self-determination. When we're farming, we're starting our own businesses, we're starting cooperatives, things of that nature, that's self-determination, and really digging down into the roots of like what it's going to take for us to move forward.
Digging into the roots.
Yeah. So Ujima was collective work and responsibility. I'm big on that. I think the only way that we can move forward is together. That's definitely Black people, but that's for really everybody. The only way up is together, you know? And so Ujamaa is cooperative economics. I'm big on cooperatives. I think that cooperatives are key, and I think that cooperatives can help small entrepreneurs kind of scale up. Nia is purpose. You know, I had to kind of find my purpose, and I think my purpose, it found me, and I just learned how to recognize and try to always go back and identify it and keep it in the front. Kuumba is just good creativity and what I do, and trying to make sure that I always, like, with everything with Soulful, it brings out like my style or the style that represents my community, and just is always like fresh and it doesn't look like what anybody else is doing. And then the Imani, which is maybe the most important one, is faith. Just having faith in what you're doing, faith in yourself, faith in your community, faith in everything, because it's ebbs and flows, it's dips, ups and downs. So you have to have faith in yourself, you know, and everything around you. And so I think when, definitely for me, I wanted to do it because it resonates with African Americans, and I really want to kind of pound that in. But I think even with like what you're doing, a lot of those principles resonate with you, because you're always doing something creative. You're always doing something.
Yeah, you have to be able to have that guiding why.
Yeah.
That purpose that you are aligning yourself with, because you're absolutely right. There's so many macro chaotic forces that you cannot control,
yeah.
down to your own personal life chaos, yeah. that you have to almost set up these barriers, your values system, so that you always know what you can operate in between.
And I
think by having those principles that you've set forward, it creates a space, a learning environment, and a safe space for, one of the things you had mentioned was a way to heal and organize stressed communities.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more
for
about
sure,
that?
For sure. I think healing is important, and I think we don't take time to heal, and I don't think we're really taught how to heal.
Oh,
definitely,
yes.
You know, emotional and spiritual wounds, and maybe things that are passed down to us that we don't even recognize, you know. Mm-hmm. And definitely when I wrote that, I was thinking about our connection to like just the land in general, and taking into account like slavery, sharecropping, Jim Crow, all these things that are kind of putting into your mind that you don't want anything to do with the soil, you don't want anything to do with the earth, the wind, the water, the sun, you know, like how do we heal that, right? Because that's a part of us, that's a part of our history, that's a part of who we are. And so how do we kind of heal from that, but also heal from just other wounds, living in this world, living in a crazy city, it's a lot of pain. How can we not hold on to that? How can we let, you know, how can we let the pain transcend us higher?
Yeah.
You know, I was told that this morning. How do you let the pain transcend you higher and not hold on to it?
So, right. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. I often think if I were president, I would like to create a holiday for healing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this should be something, again, 365, internal self-reflection, but if we could just call attention to having a day where people actually do get a little vulnerable,
yeah.
and have these empathetic conversations, and we have this collective consciousness around we're not okay. We can't just keep pushing things under the rug.
Exactly, exactly. So, and I just thought, like, getting outside, growing vegetables, just being out with nature, I feel like that exchange of energy between us and the plants, us with the birds, us with the sun, just all of that. It's just a place to kind of release and absorb new things, but also a place that if you want to have a heart-to-heart conversation with somebody, you can, you know, do it in that space, right? So I think it's that was my mindset when I was writing that.
Yes, the interconnected energies between it all. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Xavier from Soilful City.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
We're back on The Tidbit. I'm Kim Bryden, your show host and the CEO of Curate, and we are sitting down with Xavier from Soilful City. Hey, Xavier.
Hey, what's going on?
So you mentioned previously Black Dirt Farm. And so before we get into more of the core tenets of Soilful City, could you just tell us a bit more about that collective and your work sort of regionally?
Yeah, sure. The Black Dirt Farm Collective is a collective of, I guess it's young. I guess you could say ourselves like millennial farmers, mm-hmm. Black farmers from up and down the Mid-Atlantic. And we host retreats. We host like trainings. We came up with this methodology called Afroecology.
Mm. Can you define that?
Yeah, I gotta pull it up. And while I'm pulling it up, so we host, we have Afroecology retreats. We're trying to connect the rural to the urban.
Oh.
We're trying to connect elders to young people. And we're trying to kind of turn farming back into, like, bring some dignity back to farming and working with the land.
That's awesome.
And just taking things, I think, to a whole nother level. Just a new level, you know, like reclaim things and take it to the next level. And yeah. I think it's time, like, that. Our generation is like it's a ton of I'm like just one representation of a ton of returning farmers, returning farm educators and intellectuals and builders and thinkers and tinkerers and spiritual men and women and just people in general that are like getting back into like the land. So I think that's what it's about, and it's like a movement going on. So that's one of the things that keeps me going forward and keeps me excited.
Yeah, this community.
That, yeah, it's that community. It's yeah. it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, and in addition to farming, you also are now creating value-added products.
Yeah.
And you're taking the bounty from the harvest, mm-hmm. and you're turning it into a more shelf-stable product.
Yeah.
And so one of your first products to market is the amazing Pippin sauce.
Yes, yes.
And the label says connecting history through flavors. Mm-hmm. So what is so special about this sauce, and where does the name Pippin come from?
For sure. I think the special thing about the sauce, one of the special things is that it touches, it's a communal process, so it's not like, I don't know, one of the other kind of generic hot sauces that you'll find on your account, on your kind of a grocery store counter, that you don't know like where it came from or who processed it, who grew the peppers, anything about it. I wanted to kind of create like an experience with the sauce. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to tell a story with the sauce. And yeah, tell a story that people could connect to. And it's like, damn. So Horace Pippin was an African-American artist during the World War I era. And he was based in Philadelphia. Mm. And so he he was a soldier too. And so he got shot in his arm during World War I and kind of lost kind of some feeling and movement in his arm. And so he taught himself how to paint once he came back from the war. And in addition to him being a painter and a soldier, he was always a seed keeper. So he kept seeds, he saved seeds of different kinds. I don't know if he may have grew a little bit, but he definitely just held on to the seeds. There was another guy in town. I'm going to call him Weaver. That's his grandson's name. So Weaver, a white guy, was a well-known seed keeper and gardener, and he kept seeds as many as he could. And so these two guys knew each other, and Horace Pippin went to Weaver and asked him for bee stings, basically to stick his hand in the hive to get some stings. And I think that was like a remedy for like arthritis and things of that nature.
Oh.
And so, you know, of course, Weaver was like, you know, man, I want my bees. I'm not going to let you do that. But Pippin was like, yo, I got these rare seeds. We can, you know, figure something out.
Barter, yeah.
And so, boom, they trade the seeds. You know, as time goes on, African Americans move away from gardening the land. And the only way to really save seeds is to grow them. You know, you got to keep on growing them, and they keep on, you know,
reproducing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so fast forward, guy Weaver, his grandson, William Royce Weaver, he's cleaning out his grandfather's refrigerator and finds these rare seeds. And William Royce Weaver is like a world-renowned seed keeper. He has seeds from Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, all over the world, right?
Oh, my gosh.
And so
what year was this that he
I'm not sure.
Maybe 80s, 90s?
Yeah, maybe like the 80s, 90s, maybe the early 2000s.
Oh.
Unbeknownst to me, I'm a up-and-coming urban farmer, like I still am now. And I was working with my friends up in Baltimore with this guy named Denzel Mitchell. And he was the first person, the black farmer that I knew that was like, made it cool. He made it look fly, made it look fresh. He was really inspirational to me. And so he's the first person I ever heard talk about the fish peppers.
Oh.
You know, I heard of fish peppers.
And like, these were the seeds from this refrigerator.
Fish pepper sauce and all that type of stuff. Because there's another fish pepper sauce that tastes different from mine that Woodbury Kitchen makes.
Oh.
So it has like a completely different flavor from mine. And so that's when I heard about the fish peppers, and I heard about the story. I met a cool dude up in Philly named Owen Taylor. He was like he worked with William Royce Weaver. And so he was learned kind of the trade of seed keeping and things of that nature. And so I'm cool with Owen and his partner, Chris. And so, you know, I'm also part of a seed keepers collective of color. And so we went up there. I'm learning about the history of the peppers, of the seeds. And, you know, I bought some of the seeds off of his website, you know, and I grew them out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bumper crop. I had a bunch of them. I was giving them away, but I couldn't give enough away. And so I was like talking to different people, and people were throwing the idea out to me. It's like, man, you need to make some jelly or some jam or some sauce or something. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try it out.
Yeah.
And so I was just playing around different recipes, tasting stuff, burning my eyes, all types of crazy stuff. And I made a jelly and I enjoyed it. And so I told myself that in 2017, I'm going to try to bring something to market. I already had the seeds because I had saved the seeds from making the jelly the first time. And so this year, just from doing research and talking to people, figuring out ways to kind of circumnavigate my lack of land, like you first started, was like, how I just make it like this, like a shared type of process.
Love that.
Where everybody that I work with that I know is involved in this process. And so I saved the seeds. I sent them to a farm called Sharp's Farm. They started the seeds off for me. I got the seeds back. I gave them out to people, my friends in the community. And I bought all the peppers back from them. And I wanted to
kind of... So they grew the peppers in a variety of different locations.
Exactly. And so I wanted to kind of make it so, like, you, Kim, like, if you know, or you can meet the person who grew the peppers for you, you know.
Awesome. And it's like in that batch of hot sauce. Wow.
And so this year, I'm going to do it again, but I'm actually going to do it a little bit differently, and I'm going to make it a better experience. And so I'm super excited, and I really want to kind of tell that story. And I think if I can kind of figure out the system and get everything in order, which I think I will be able to do this year, I want to be able to kind of bring the history out of other foods and connect people back to those histories, you know.
Absolutely.
So I have some cool ideas, so.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll
and
talk about
it. I mean, your sauce, I mean, everything you bottled this year, it sold out.
Yeah, it sold out. I only have one more bottle left.
Oh,
and,
my
and that's
gosh.
Just like a I'm just going to hold on to it,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to make more bottles. And it's a lot I learned. And I'm super excited. Taking your school of food classes has helped me out a lot. Just organizing things and making sure I have just the proper paperwork.
Yeah, all of those nitty gritty things of starting a food business.
Man, it's a lot of stuff you wouldn't, you know, you take it for granted when you grab something off the shelf, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we are featuring three different entrepreneurs on The Tidbit from DC and Baltimore and their projects. So our listeners, yes, you listening, will have the opportunity to donate $5, $10, I don't know, $50, you choose, to fund one of these projects. And if you contribute any amount, you get to vote on who receives the funds. So, Xavier, with all of your budding entrepreneurial ideas, let's say you had an extra $1,000. What would you do with it?
Yeah. With the extra $1,000, I would buy my, so I'm scaling up, so I'll buy more bottles. 1,000 bottles to be exact. I would get new labels. So what I'm trying to do this year is that each batch is going to have the zip code of where it came from.
Oh, I love that.
So if you wanted to know, if you wanted to get the batch that came from Ward 8, 20032, boom, you can get that batch. You want to know the batch that came from Uptown Ward 4, 20012, you can get that batch. So that's one thing.
Cool.
Then as far as the labels are concerned, I'm going to change the labels around. So whereas though there will be a way that you can connect directly with the people who grew the peppers, and so make it kind of I'm working on a way to make it so functional, so is that you might be able to go to a website or something like that, and they're talking to you about the peppers they grew. You're like, oh, what's up, this is Mike, I grew these peppers in this neighborhood, blah blah blah, you know, come check us out, this is what we have going on. So make it kind of like a more experiential process.
I love that.
So all that's the $1,000 would go to all those types of things. So it'll definitely get put to good use.
And another thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the peppers aren't just distributed to traditional farmers, right?
Yeah,
are community housing developments.
It's everybody. So it's like a legit, churches. It's a legit like a diverse city project. I think it's one of the things that epitomizes urban agriculture. So we had a rural farms, but we had like some places, different, like some public housing developments, some gardens on public housing development land. We had,
and then you're teaching the residents and the kids about gardening.
So it's really about like making these connections and connecting everything together and figuring out like, so if I'm able to do this with this hot sauce, that means we've put together I've been a part of a creation of some type of system that can be utilized for other community resiliency ideas and tools. So, you know, if everybody's growing cabbage or lettuce or whatever that is, you know, we can maybe scale up collectively. And so, you know, if something is to happen where we need to bottle or can or whatever, these things, we can do it collectively. So
the system's in place.
Exactly. So just trying, that was really the idea behind it. Like, how can we connect all these dots? Because there's so much beautiful work that's going on in D.C. around food. A lot of it's disconnected. So how can we, like, tie it all together and have it flow? You know what I mean? Like, flow.
Yes.
And be kind of nimble so it can move with the wind. If something happens, it can shift. So that's the idea. And it takes everybody to do it. It can't just be one person.
Definitely. Oh, I have goosebumps. Amazing. So we are featuring these three different entrepreneurs. We had two others the last two episodes, so check those out. And like I said, if you're able to donate any amount of fund, you get to vote on which project receives those funds. That is right. You have the power to put your dollars straight into the local economy. So join us. Head over to Patreon, patreon.com/thetidbit. And until next time, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.